I'm Tom Cooney, and this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Carolyn Washburn. Carolyn is the editor and vice president of The Enquirer. And Carolyn, I'm sure this has been a very interesting time to be in your position in a newspaper. But you've got even more changes coming, haven't you, with even the size of the newspaper, the physical size of the newspaper. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the thought behind that.
Readers have told us for years, many years, that they really someday would love a smaller, more compact size. You know, and newspapers have gotten narrower over time, but you think about sitting at the breakfast table or on an airplane or whatever, trying to, you know, and the paper's flopping around. And so part of this will be, it'll be a really great reader convenience, and we're in the process of prototyping right now, and it feels really good. It is interesting when you do research on this that both news and advertising actually have as much or more impact on a smaller sheet than on a broadsheet, which is, so I'll take this, take a story that ran in the middle of a page on the big broadsheet, and it takes up a full page on the news size, and so that article or an ad, it has more impact. It feels more obvious, and so we can have more impact with our content that way. And in joining up with Columbus, which is one of the things we're doing too, this will be the first time this technology, and don't ask me to explain all of the press production technology, but this press technology will be used for the first time in the United States in this project, and we're doing it together with Columbus, which will allow us to save some money on the production side of things that we can use to invest in the journalism.
Well, back when I was 11 or 12 years old and carrying the Enquirer around in my on my bike in baskets, I would have liked to have a much smaller newspaper, I can assure you. Together with the size of the newspaper, you've also announced a change in terms of how you're going to do the online newspaper. Maybe you can share that with us, too.
This has been a debate in the industry for the last several years. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are choosing to read online or on a tablet or a smartphone instead of in print. I don't really care as long as people are engaged in the community and consume the information. But we have gotten to the point where now enough people are making those switch that, you know, now we have the print readers who are really paying for our content, and you have a growing number of digital users who are there a lot on our digital products who aren't paying for that content. And finally, a realization that you're not just paying for the convenience, you're paying for the content. Doing good journalism costs money. And so we're really going to be asking everybody who consumes our content, regardless of whether it's a smartphone or a tablet or the website or whatever, to also participate in paying for that content. So there'll be some new subscription combinations and things like that. We haven't set all those prices yet.
I guess as a print newspaper reader, probably lots of people my age still read the actual print. That's not going away, is it?
No, absolutely not. People still, hundreds of thousands of people a day still read the print newspaper and are very clear that they still have passion for my newspaper is what they call it. So there will still be a good, healthy print newspaper.
Well, Carolyn, we're out of time today, but tomorrow maybe you can come back and talk to us about some of the issues that the Enquirer is going to be writing about in the next year. For BusinessWise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney. This is BusinessWise. Our guest again today is Carolyn Washburn. Carolyn is the editor and vice president of The Enquirer. Carolyn, what are some of the issues that you're going to focus on at The Enquirer in the upcoming year?
Covering issues is my favorite part of the job. It's why I got into it, and it's trying to help. We really look at it in terms of helping people think through decisions they will have to make. So we look at every one of our beats, we call it, and think about what are the issues going on that beat that people will have to make decisions about or be smarter about in this next period of time and really focus energy on that. So some examples, Mark Kernut, who covers social issues and minority affairs, just started what will be an ongoing in-depth look at the community of Avondale. It's sort of a case study for a lot of efforts to sort of rebuild neighborhoods that once were grand and have been struggling. And so we're going to kind of use Avondale as a case study. That's one example. Laura Baverman has been looking at and will continue to look at kind of the ecosystem of entrepreneurship in our region and what things, not to introduce us to entrepreneurs, but also to look at what government and what other big businesses need to do. What does education need to do to support entrepreneurship and really create an ecosystem? You know, this is a huge presidential election year. We'll be looking at the issues that people care about and trying to understand how that candidate's positions may affect us and what people here want the candidates to address. Northern Kentucky is at the cusp of a lot of change right now. Tremendous change in leadership. People who have been leading institutions. There are changes at Newport on the Levee and the River Center, commercial development, expansion of Gateway. Northern Kentucky is really also on the cusp of a lot of change. And so we're going to be just looking at who the leadership is, what the vision is, and some of the initiatives and projects and what the implications are, not only for Northern Kentucky, but for the region as a whole. I mean, those are just a couple, but we have dozens of issues like that.
As a journalist, when you look at those issues and expose the public to the issues, do you try to expose a particular point of view, or you just try to get the facts out and the perspective out?
We're trying to identify issues that people may not have understood were even issues. There's some standard questions or angles we always go after. Who are the various stakeholders, even stakeholders you might not have expected would be affected by an issue? What's the historical context of the issue? What's played out in the past over time on that issue? What's the geographic context? What's happening in other parts of the state or the country or the world that we can learn from? Almost no issue is unique to us. So what can we learn from in other places? Have people committed to some things in the past, and now we need to sort of go back and review and hold them accountable? So we're trying to educate in those kinds of ways.
For Business Wise, I'm Tom Cooney. I'm with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Crystal, we recently wrote an article in our Inquirer series with reference to an individual who was mid-50s in middle management of their company, and they were reading the handwriting on the wall and thinking they're going to lose their job soon and wondering if this would be a good time to start the business that they've been thinking about and what they should consider as they go through that planning process.
So whether you've lost your job or if you see the writing on the wall, you need to dust yourself off and really use this as an opportunity to follow your dreams. You know, the fun and the passion that can be had in running your own business is something I think many people should take a look at.
The first thing you look at when you think about starting your business is think about what your attributes are. You know, what's your idea, your process? What is it that you can do better than other people that are in that business do? Do you know how to finance it? You know, do you have the skills necessary to start it or the contacts with people who do have the skills that can help you?
Surround yourself with people who can fill in the gaps and really allow you and your business to be tremendously successful. Don't be afraid to ask people for advice.
I think you'll find it's easy to get advice from other people when you're starting a business. What you may have a hard time getting from other people is cash. And cash really is important, so you need to plan that out. How are you going to fund the startup of your business? How are you going to fund your personal life as you start a business, presumably at a lesser income than you were making in a job?
And certainly embrace technology. Technology has really evened the playing field for many small businesses. You can do so much online these days, including marketing, selling your product. So make sure that you are using technology and value innovation so you can become very competitive.
Well, and hire creatively. Make sure that, you know, you have relationships, whether it's a part-time employee, an independent contractor, you share clients with another company in the same business. You have to do whatever it takes in order to get your revenues.
Look out for best practices. Talk to anybody that will speak with you in terms of what's worked for them, what hasn't worked for them. You can accomplish a lot by just avoiding a mistake. So if you talk to people and learn from others' mistakes, that is a huge advantage. So many people don't want to go out and speak with others, but I've just found over the course of my career, the more that you can learn from others, the better off you're going to be. But as you start your business, or even if you've been in business for a long time, in my mind, probably just as important of all the things that we've been speaking about is your attitude. Again, have a can-do attitude. Think in the positive light. Don't let fear hold you back, because having your own business is something that is the American dream. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, I think lending in terms of banks loaning money to businesses, primarily smaller businesses, seems to be loosening up, but yet it's still difficult, we are hearing, for many small businesses to get that much needed loan to grow their working capital, to grow a new product line. There are some very specific things people should do if they're looking to obtain a loan.
Since the recession, credit has remained tight. Banks have tightened their guidelines, and it's not as easy to get a loan as it used to be.
And some of the things that people should be aware of if you are looking to increase your financing or before you talk to the bank is make sure you have a very specific, clear message in terms of what you're going to do with the money, why you need the money, and how it's going to enhance your business and enhance your profitability, help you grow your company, increase your cash flow, because the bank is very interested in how you're going to pay the money back.
Right. Banks don't want to lend money to fund your losses. They want to lend money to fund your growth. They may want to lend money to fund your working capital. So you have to have a good story as to why you need the money. Your business is increasing. It takes more capital so that you can continue to increase your profits.
And before you approach your banker, make sure that you have scrubbed your financial statements to the best of your ability. Cut your costs if you can, scrutinize every expense, and take action, even if it means cutting your own salary, until you can at least break even. They're very interested in how you're going to generate cash. Again, cash is generally king for businesses.
You know, one thing that always impresses bankers is if you can compare your business to other businesses in your industry and it compares favorably. And the fact that you even have those ratios and can express that to a banker enhances your credibility.
I do want to mention that the state of Ohio has come out recently in the last 6 weeks with three brand new loan programs designed especially and specifically for qualifying small businesses. And they are really things that programs that I think every business who is looking to buy real estate, buy equipment, needs to check out to see if it can work. There's the Collateral Enhancement Program, the Ohio Capital Access Program, and then the Targeted Investment Program. They are effectively risk mitigators. So if you go to the bank, say, hey, I want to buy a piece of equipment, the bank says, that sounds great. The only problem is you don't have enough collateral to put down in terms of a down payment. This might be a great opportunity for you to take advantage of one of these state programs. You talk to your banker, say, I understand the state's got some new programs. How can I participate? And if you can qualify, the state will actually place a deposit with the bank in cash, so that you can effectively fill the gap. The website is www.ssbci.development.ohio.gov. Or if you'd like more information, Tom and I wrote a column about this recently in the Inquirer. I'll be happy to send you a copy of the column. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. We're delighted to have as our guest today, Mike Michael. Mike is the president and CEO of Fifth Third Bank here in Greater Cincinnati, and actually much larger territory than just here in Cincinnati, Mike.
Our region, you know, extends from Piqua well into northern Kentucky.
You can't help but see a lot of Fifth Third's new advertisements, the messaging, all around curiosity. And it certainly got my curiosity up. Where does this whole curious theme come from?
Well, it's an outgrowth of several things, you know, not the least of which is thinking about what our value proposition is. We made a change last year to the Leo Burnett Agency. That itself was an outgrowth of wondering whether we were conveying to our customers what we were and what we were about. And we spent a great deal of time considering our vision and our value proposition, you know, which is really around the customer and around the communities in which we live. And curiosity came from the fact that rather than being a product sales organization, as Fifth Third was known to be for so many years, you know, we really think about the customer. And curiosity comes with asking questions and listening for the response and trying to figure out what we can do to avail all the things that Fifth Third can do for our customers, you know, to them and make and really help them achieve their life goals.
So your focus is more directed towards the customer versus necessarily what you can offer the customer. It's more about what you think the customer needs.
If you don't ask the customer what they're trying to achieve, then you're never going to be able to help them get to those achievements and to their goals. So we ask them what their objectives are. We have what we call a financial needs assessment, an FNA. We ask them and encourage them when they're in our branches to sit down and talk to us about their profile and what it is they're trying in their life to achieve. And then we can do the best work for them to help them get there.
At least historically, many bankers, the relationship with the customer was the banker would come in all stiff, you know, and tell the customer all the reasons in the world why they can't grow the business, why they can't buy that piece of equipment. But from what you're saying, it's a completely different attitude.
It is. And this is a tremendously competitive industry. Selling the number one commodity of all times, money. And yet it's a service business, and I think the quintessential service business. And the way to differentiate yourself is by forming that deep bond and deep relationship, you know, with your client. And we think the center post of that is listening, and hence curiosity.
How does that curiosity represent itself in your products?
The products themselves are the sorts of things that are designed to meet particular needs. You know, so for instance, we created, you know, what we call the Duo card. We had customers coming to us saying, why in the world do I have to carry a separate card for an ATM or a debit card and a separate credit card? We created a product where they can do it all in one called the Fifth Third Duo card. And there are many examples of that nature.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Mike Michael. Mike is the president and CEO of Fifth Third Bank of Greater Cincinnati. And Mike, you sit in a great position to kind of judge the economy in this area because you see what the loan demand is. And what is the loan demand these days? I mean, are you seeing the business climate continuing to get better in this area?
We are, Tom. It's getting a little bit better. I won't say that it's overwhelming or particularly robust, but we are seeing people asked to borrow. Now, one of the things that banks are attacked for oftentimes is that we're not lending. And I would tell you that quite the contrary. You know, we're not seeing enough good opportunities to lend, and we don't have enough people coming through the door looking to borrow. So the more of that we see, the better. Maybe this will invite some people to come into our offices, you know, to ask for money.
Well, don't you think what we see in our client base is we see a lot of businesses that are doing well, they're making pretty good profits, but they're reluctant to expand or add employees, you know, the things that they need to borrow money to do. Not necessarily because they can't get loans, they're just cautious.
Well, the uncertainty's still out there. Businesses can't really plan for what's happening next year or the next year because politically the climate's just not stable.
I couldn't agree more, and that's the real issue that we see. One of the real issues is if you're a small business owner, you may not choose to make that investment because that new investment, because you don't know how you're going to be taxed in the next year or two. You know, inevitably, I think we're all going to pay, and I say all going to pay higher taxes, but you can't do any of your investment analysis with all the uncertainty that's present today. And therefore, there's a lot of capital on the sidelines. So we've seen loan demand improve. But some of it's because equipment is just plain wearing out, and people who've waited and waited are now having to act.
This year, you can still take accelerated depreciation. You have some availability on the bonus, some availability on the 179. So if they come to you today, when rates are still fairly low, borrow the money, buy the equipment, then they can make the decision after the election on how they want to treat that from a tax point of view. So it still, in my mind, makes a lot of sense to borrow the money for those fixed asset improvements.
Yeah, I agree totally. And that, who knows, that may go away and likely
right.
will at some point. So we are seeing some take advantage of that opportunity, and we'd love to see more.
Well, if nothing changes, Mike, this year a company can take an immediate expensing deduction, 179 deduction of up to $139,000. Next year, that drops to $25,000. So clearly, this is something that people need to be thinking about in terms of how they're making their capital improvements.
Yep, that's great advice. That's really a big deal. That's a lot of free cash.
What advice do you have for your clients, Mike, your customers, if someone out there is thinking about a loan, I may need to, what's the first step they should do before they approach the banker?
The first step is to make sure they have a good plan for how they're going to use the money. But then I'd engage their banker in a discussion and figure out what the best approach is to take. I'd view your bank as a partner and your relationship with your banker as a partnership.
Mike, we're out of time, but if folks would like more information about Fifth Third, about some of the programs that you have to offer, how can they reach you?
You can feel free to call me directly or stop in any of our branches. We have 189 financial centers in the area, and we would be delighted to do whatever we can to help.
And the website is 53.com?
It is, www.53.com.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Ron Wiley. Ron is with the Ohio Department of Development. And Ron, I met you a few months ago when I was up at Columbus for our Small Business Advisory Committee meeting. I was just very intrigued about some of the loan programs that the state of Ohio is making available to small businesses. That is often the one big thing that a small business can't get their hands on in terms of growing their business and growing jobs.
I tell you, Crystal, access to capital has been one of the major obstacles that small business cite as a reason that prevents them from expanding. And of course, from the state perspective, we're interested in business expansion because businesses that expand creates jobs and jobs provide more revenue to the state. This is a mission that everyone within the Department of Development is very excited about.
Well, let's talk about the three new programs.
They're designed for small businesses, any small business within the state of Ohio, and they're designed to provide, they're a risk mitigant, if you will. They're designed to encourage the banks to lend to small businesses. As you may recall, over the last 3 years, when the economy soured, the bank lending began to tighten. The State Small Business Credit Initiative was designed to free up capital so that banks could then be comfortable with lending to good deals. There are a number of businesses out there that are good, solid businesses, but let's say the collateral has depreciated in value. We're seeing a tremendous freeing up of capital as a result of the Ohio Capital Access Program, the Collateral Enhancement Program, as well as the Targeted Investment Program. There's $55 million that was received through the Department of Treasury to allocate to Ohio to support small business lending.
How do you define small business for this purpose? Is it based on revenue?
It follows very generously the small business definition, but we've even made it tighter in that if it's under 250 employees and revenues generally under $10 million, it's designed to augment what resources are currently available at the state.
Well, and the program that I find most intriguing is the Collateral Enhancement Program. Maybe you can share a couple of details on that one.
That program, Crystal, has everyone excited because it's filling a much necessary gap in that in collateral valuations. So let's say if you want to buy a building for $1 million, everything works out well, but the appraisal comes back at $800,000.
Which is not unusual these days.
Not unusual, or equipment. And the bank will only lend a percentage of the appraised amount, not the purchase price. So if it's 80% of the appraised amount, you have a gap of $640,000 what the bank will lend and the purchase price of $1 million. Mm-hmm. With this program, we will fill the gap by physically placing a deposit up to 30% of the shortfall with the bank. This is the risk mitigant that will allow the bank to then move forward with making that deal.
And we all know that banks love deposits, don't they, Ron? We are out of time today, but if folks would like more information, the website is
www.ohio.gov.
Tom and I actually wrote a column on this whole initiative, these three loan programs, a few weeks ago. If you'd email me or call me, then I'll be happy to send you a copy of our column, which summarizes these three programs. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Today, our guest is Ron Wiley. Ron is with the Ohio Department of Development. And Ron, Ohio has recently rolled out some new loan programs with the specific goal of targeting small businesses.
The goal is certainly to increase small business growth and development within the state of Ohio. And it's also to complement the newly created Jobs Ohio. As you may know, Jobs Ohio is working with business attraction and corporate attraction, and yet there's still a need for small businesses to get the attention that they need. And of course, we also know that small businesses are the engine that drives employment within any community. And these programs were designed to augment existing programs within the state that will enhance and encourage private banks, the financial institutions, to lend to small businesses. The CAP program, the Ohio Capital Access Program, was a program already existing within the state, and yet now we have more dollars to allocate to it, and we can increase our allocation. The program is, again, it's a mitigant tool for the bank in that a loan reserve pool is created, mm-hmm. which allows the bank to draw upon if any of the loans that were enrolled as part of the program happens to default. And so they can draw upon this pool. Give you a quick example. A loan, the bank makes 10 loans of $100,000 to these businesses, and you have $100,000 within the pool. If any of the 10 loans were to default, they can use those funds to offset the cost they incurred in the default. And it's as a result of that, banks are more likely then to take a risk on those loans. So it's a program that, were it not for this risk mitigant, would not happen.
And then the collateral enhancement program is similar, but not exactly the same.
It's not exactly the same. It's more, it's a direct enhancement in that that particular loan receives a 30%. The bank gets the deposit to fill a gap that might exist in situations where there's a collateral shortfall.
And then the third program is a little more specialized, more targeted industries.
Yeah, it's generally for venture capital companies that are coming out of first or second round equity investments, where the company has not proven their commercialization of that product yet, but it has a lot of viability.
So if someone listening today has a need or think they have a need, do they go to the bank? Do they go to the state?
They go to the bank and they can tell them about the program. The bank will contact us and then we'll enroll the bank, and then they can then enroll that borrower. Also, they can come to us, the Department of Development, and then we will utilize our network of banks that have already enrolled to send them to the bank.
SSBCI.development.ohio.gov if you'd like more information. Also, Tom and I wrote a column about this a couple of weeks ago in the Enquirer. Email me, call me. I'll be happy to send you a brief summary of the different programs. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. I'm delighted to have as my guest today Tony Moss. Tony is the president and CTO of JTM Food Group. And Tony, you are the second generation at JTM, and I know that you have the third generation, your children, and maybe your nieces and nephews are working in the business, and you got the fourth generation in the making. I know you have some grandchildren. But let's talk about entrepreneurship, because you started out, and your brothers and your father, in a butcher shop, in a small business, and you've now grown JTM to be more than a $100 million company.
Yeah.
It took some risk and really a lot of guts, I think, to step out and start a business.
Yeah.
What do you say to somebody out there today who might be just nervous or afraid to take that big step to start a business?
You know, there's nothing better than being part of a family business. I mean, it really is something that is an absolute blessing. When I grew up in the 1960s, and again, this is going to get into some of this stuff with laws and whatever, but we all had to work in the stores. That would make me less than 10 years old, and we were working actively, and that was the same with the rest of our siblings and my cousins, you know. Mm-hmm. So we all worked hard together, and we provided for our family. That's the way we did it. But with that came constantly of knowing you have to generate more income to continually taking risks. This is America. Mm-hmm. This is what it's all about, is being able to provide for yourself and to make something, to be innovative, to create new things that are a service to others. Looking at today in the state of economy, I wonder how somebody really can open up a business today with the onslaught of different regulations and stuff that are out there and what it takes to be incorporated and so forth and so on. But don't let that stop you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the American dream. It's what we're about.
And don't you think the people that start their business, there's just something about the passion that goes in that. And and the drive and determination that they have. Yeah. And what a wonderful way to share your values with your children and teach your children the relationship between work and money.
There's no doubt. I mean, it absolutely is that, but it's a life. It's your life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's what it becomes. If you say, how often do you work? I say, I never don't work.
Don't you think that's interesting? I find this fairly humorous too.
Yeah.
Somebody will always say, well, it's your business life, your work life, or is it your personal life? Mm-hmm. To me, it is my life.
It's your
there is
life.
No distinguishment
that's right.
between
it's,
that.
It's your life, and it's great. And I love it, and I'm so proud of what we're doing and where we're going. But to your point, though, I mean, there is so much risk-taking, but there's so much reward. And you really can't have fear. You got to have good smarts, and you got to make strategies, and you got to think that stuff through, but then you got to go for it.
As a common thread amongst the most successful entrepreneurs, it's those that aren't afraid to step out, but when they're smart enough to know to surround themselves with resources that help them complement their own skills.
Yeah, our business is so beyond myself and my three brothers. You got to be kidding me. I mean, we got a tremendous team of people around us. I mean, that is our strength.
How many employees do you have?
We've got 380.
That's wonderful. And you're a national business now, and you're very much into health food. And I think a lot of people would find that surprising. And when I say health food, I don't mean health food like you think of health food. It's just healthy ways that you prepare your food.
Well, health food meaning you can eat taco meat and chili
and
spaghetti
sounds
sauce, all that
to me.
Good stuff, and macaroni and cheese, and you all got the low salt and low sodium products, and it's been great for us.
And you've just collaborated recently with the Alliance for Healthier Generation to help the schools. You're in the schools and hospitals as well.
Yeah. So we're at the very cutting edge of helping become partners with the United States government and schools and stuff, and really talking about what are the type of things we can do to bring to the market to the school children.
Well, Tony, if people listening today would like more information about JTM Food Group, how can they find that out?
Yeah, I think the website's the best way, jtmfoodgroup.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner. I'm with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Leslie Spencer. Leslie is the executive director of Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation, and Bill Keating, who is a member of the board of the Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation and a former chair. I know that Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation is responsible for bringing a tremendous number of amateur sporting events to Greater Cincinnati, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you do.
Our mission is basically to be the eyes and ears of the community and go after bidding on and acquiring amateur and professional sporting events to bring economic impact to the community. We have been around for 23 years as a nonprofit 501c3 and have hosted and acquired more than 250 different unique sporting events for the region.
And that's everything from fourth grade basketball national tournaments to women's NCAA and I guess probably men's NCAA tournaments.
Inline hockey has been one of our largest, most impactful events that we hosted just this past summer. 8,000 room nights and visitors from all 50 states. So it's anything from cheer and dance to karate to basketball, baseball, boat racing, inline sports.
So not only are you bringing all those participants, but you're probably bringing their families as well.
Exactly.
And they go out to eat and they buy things, and it really is an economic driver. And Bill, you've been involved with the organization for many years. What's been the most fascinating thing for you in terms of how the organization and sports has changed through the years?
I think the engagement of different constituencies in sports. Years ago, it was baseball, football, and basketball, really all men's sports. Now it's become men, women, disability games, just all kinds of different opportunities. I was with my father a few years ago at a disability swim meet, a Paralympic meet, and we watched where a guy in a wheelchair was pulling an empty wheelchair to the end of the pool because his buddy was swimming, needed his wheelchair when he got out. There's another guy in a wheelchair leading a blind person to the starting blocks. You see people without arms and legs swim the length of the pool. Pretty impressive what they can get accomplished. And as I walked out with my father, I said, you think back when I first started practicing law, and it really was a man's world. You know, there weren't many women in the practice of law, not many minorities, not many disabled. And you start looking at sports and how it gave confidence to people and showed others that they're competitive. And now you have disabled or mainstreamed. Women are taking over the world from what we see. Women's sports are taking over. Sports has really been a driver to include everybody in society by their confidence and proof.
And Leslie, you were an athlete and still are an athlete. As a female athlete, do you see women in sports really gaining a lot more momentum even from the time when you were at Marshall?
I was definitely a Title IX baby, and without Title IX movement, I would have never had the opportunity to get an education and be where I am today. So I absolutely applaud the women and the men like Bill Keating that made it possible for myself to go and utilize sports as a tool. But yes, I absolutely see that even when I started in this business of sports corporations, there was only three women, including myself, that was an executive director position. Well, now that it's starting to grow, because it was usually a man's world at that level.
If people are interested in learning more about the Greater Cincinnati Sports Corporation, which is a not-for-profit organization, because you look for members, you look for resources, correct?
Absolutely. All of the money that we do in fundraising does go to the Sporting Event Bid Fund, which allows us to go after these events and bring them into our community.
And if folks want to learn more, what's your website?
CincySports.org, CincySports.org.
And even corporations and businesses can get involved in these types of things, right?
Absolutely, and volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers, students, and interns.
And if people have programs they want to bring their sports to town, we can help them organize that and make it work.
And everyone has children that participate. So if you know a sport or an opportunity that we can actually put in a bid and bring that to town, we're looking for grassroots ears and eyes as well.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.